The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Joining me is Dr. Jim Dennison from the Dennison Forum on Truth and Culture. And after a wonderful, much-needed rest and celebration, Jim Dennison, congratulations, 40 years of marriage with your bride.
Well, thank you, Gino, and I am to be congratulated. She used to be consoled, I would think, but I overmarried. People tell me I outkick my coverage and I have no defense at all.
Well, for what it's worth, it would seem that God in his grace and his mercy has been very, very good to you.
He has, and, on so many levels.
And congratulations, Ryan Dennison has done an admirable job in your absence, so he's to be congratulated as well.
Well, thank you very much. In fact, people are asking me when I'm going on vacation again. I think it's a coup. I think something's afoot here, and that would be all right. I could go to Hawaii, and Ryan could write the article. We could work this out.
Basically, you have a preheader that says the place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. And as I was reading the article, you note a little bit about President Biden's address to Congress and reactions to it. And then you talk about Scott Morrison, who's the Prime Minister of Australia, a very public Christian, and how The Guardian is reporting on his quote-unquote sense of divine calling, which the article you write takes a decidedly skeptical view of this divine calling. In other words, Christians in the public square who actually sometimes are willing to articulate, hey, you know what, I believe that there's a God and that God has brought me to this place, that's going to be a message that's going to be met not just simply with skepticism, but you intimate that maybe cynicism and maybe even hostility.
And I think we're at that place now where it is all of that hostility, because that runs against the narrative of the culture, the narrative that we're seeing today. I saw something the other day, Gina, that really caught my eye, where the person was making the point that the media is no longer reporting the news. They're reporting a narrative. They have a very specific narrative, and they use news items in a slanted way to advance that narrative, whatever that might be, left, right. There's this narrative now that they're moving toward, and this idea of divine calling runs in the face of the kind of secularism narrative that is so dominant today.
And what's interesting about what you just said in the article is it came to my mind that it could be that the narrative is the news. The narrative is the news in the sense that there's this growing group of people that are warning us, telling us, demanding that we either embrace this new narrative or reject the new narrative. In your article, you say we're in the early stages of a movement the church has never faced before, one that threatens us in ways that are now becoming clearer. You go on and you talk a little bit about that, but for our purposes, what is this movement? How is it different from anything we've ever faced before?
Yeah, thank you. And we're familiar with the opposition that we've been talking about, Equality Act, other threats to religious liberty. We've seen that sort of thing before, maybe not on this level, but we've seen this kind of a trajectory. Here's what's coming now, and it's on a level that really is new to so many of us, and is something we have not seen in this country, maybe haven't seen in Christian history. There's this idea now, this secularism that is essentially becoming a rival religion. It's becoming a new religion. It's intending to replace Christianity with a secular vision for a better future. It all centers around authenticity. It centers around freedom, centers around the idea that you need to have freedom to be as your own authentic self, and that that's vital to personal and social flourishing. If you disagree with that in the context of biblical morality, you're dangerous to society. You're potentially deadly to LGBTQ individuals. You, therefore, are somebody who threatens us, and that kind of worldview that you represent has to be replaced. That we have to move that to the side, that we have to eliminate this, that we have to get to a place now where the secularism sort of civic religion replaces this dangerous biblical morality that they would say has in many ways shackled us and kept us from fulfilling the authentic self that is now before us. So they have a vision for a future very different from the Christian vision, and it's competing with us on a level we've not seen before.
Yeah, this is so very interesting to me because one person characterized this as a civil war. Now, again, the civil war, it's not guns and blows just yet. But he's talking about a secular civil war that seems to have leaked into the church. And the way he characterized it is the civil war is we're asking and answering the question, do objective moral standards come from God or not? Does God really judge our behavior? Does morality derive from God, and do rights derive from God? So there's a social, cultural element, but what you've also written about, it's leaking into the Christian worldview, and dare I use the term Christian culture?
Absolutely is. We've been hearing for so long that the Christian faith is all about authenticity. It's all about being your own best self. It's about living your best life. It's about finding that freedom that for you to be the person that you always wish to be. The faith is a means to that end. Well, when we're teaching that sort of self-fulfillment as opposed to self-denial, we're no longer doing the biblical faith where Jesus said, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me. We're to present our bodies as a living sacrifice. We're to be crucified with Christ. We're to believe that it's in submission and in surrender and in accountability to God, that God then makes us who we could not make ourselves, and that we then experience his good, pleasing, and perfect will, and it's then that his plan to prosper us and not harm us and give us hope in the future comes to reality, not because we live our best life and get God to help us, but because we surrender to God for his best purpose for us, a completely different worldview, a completely different outcome than what many of us have been teaching and hearing in this kind of moral therapeutic deism that is so dominant in the culture today.
Yeah, and you brought up moralistic therapeutic deism, which was, you know, popular and talked a lot about. You even wrote about it a few years back. That in this culture, in the broader culture, at that point, it was about 15 years ago, there was a survey done among American teenagers and even those who were self-described Christians. And you could see this shift where they believed in a God, but this God sort of watches from a distance. The God wants you to be nice. The central goal is to be happy and feel good about yourself. And that message seems to be a message that resonates with people who believe not in a God of the Bible, but a God who seems to carry that core value. God wants me to be happy and feel good about myself. Obviously, we as Christians who embrace historical biblical Christianity believe, well, what if that's not God's goal? What if God's goal is for us to glorify him, to know him, to realize that we have a problem with sin and that Jesus is the solution to that problem? You talked about we're in the early stages of a movement the church has never faced before, one that threatens us in ways that are now becoming clearer. And off air, we were talking a little bit about a Dr. Al Mohler quote. And what I wanted to ask you is, again, we're in the early parts of this movement. What are some of the early strategies that you would think about and recommend as we face some of the challenges in this uncharted territory?
Yeah, thank you for that. I really do think we're seeing something that's only going to get bigger and larger. It's going to involve even more. And the basic idea is that we have to replace Christianity with a secular vision, with a secular future, with a secular sense of what it is to experience freedom and authenticity. And it's not enough to push it to the sideline. It's not enough to marginalize it. We have to replace it That's where I think we find ourselves now. So as we're responding to this as believers, we're going to have some options. One option is to, at the end of the day, agree. It's going to decide that we're going to go along to get along, that either the Bible was wrong or we were wrong in how we interpreted the Bible for 35 centuries in the context of Mosaic law and all of that. And so we're going to decide that we're going to cohere with it. It's kind of a Christ of culture model, to go back to Richard Niebuhr's book. And some are going to do the Christ against culture. They're just going to pull back. They're going to withdraw. They're going to try to find kind of a Christian subset and try to ride out the storm to the degree that they can, which keeps us all in the salt shaker. The idea here is to be incarnationally engaged in the culture, speaking the truth in love, and deciding we will pay whatever price comes with that. The mantle has been passed to us from the apostles who had to stand before the Sanhedrin and say, we must serve God rather than men. From those that are paying with their lives in North Korea, for those that are facing persecution in Cuba and Beijing, I've met many believers, from Muslim background believers that are paying with their lives. Now the mantle's passed to us. I'm not predicting that we'll pay with our lives in America, but I do believe that we're going to pay a price we've never paid before in America for standing up for biblical morality. And today is the day to decide that we are willing to do that.
Yeah, and it seems to me, again, as we're thinking about institutions and popular culture, and we as Christians have grown, dare I use the term, apathetic and indifferent, that this great experiment called the American experiment is exactly that, that we could literally see our government and our freedoms change. But the most important thing isn't just simply living in a different government, because Christians all throughout time and space have lived in different governments and circumstances. It's maintaining a biblical commitment, if you will. You talk about it in this article about, I guess the term that you use is, I should know this. The divine calling. In other words, we do have a divine calling. We have been placed in the circumstance that we find ourselves. God has placed us here in the circumstance that we find ourselves to love him, honor him, glorify him.
And he's done that in the time, not just the place. I've grown up in this context, as a lot of us have, that God's will for us involves kind of a location. You think of a Macedonian vision and God calling you to Colorado or calling me back to Texas, and I certainly believe that God does that. But God not only has a place for us, he has a time for us. It's by God's providence we weren't having this conversation 100 years ago or 100 years from now with the Lord tarries. And if God couldn't use us in this time, we wouldn't be in this time. If God couldn't empower us and equip us and give us the courage and strength we need to make him public and to glorify him in this day and time, we wouldn't be in this day and time. So let's see ourselves as missionaries, not just to where we are, but to when we are, and understand that all of that is part of the providence of God.
Yeah, and again, it seems to me that all of our hope eggs aren't in the basket of government, although you and I have repeatedly said, I'm still for a constitutional republic. I'm still for a First and Second Amendment. I want to live in a government that accords me the most amount of freedom. But in this new movement that you're talking about in our response, what are there any other things that you can think of that we should be maybe aware of and be thinking harder and longer about?
Absolutely. We're going to start deciding, I think, right now, what it's going to mean as a church for us to have to make some decisions relative to things like the Equality Act, relative to civil rights in the context of LGBTQ or SOGI, sexual orientation, gender identity, in the context of hiring practices, in the context of how we're going to handle our tax-exempt issues. I think now is a time to be looking at some of the legal issues inside this, to be deciding what are some institutional costs we're willing to pay. If I'm in a Christian university, I'm thinking about NCAA participation. I'm thinking about Pell Grants. I'm thinking about the degree to which government grants relative to scholarships are going to be available to me if I'm not willing to amend my student handbook. If I'm practicing as a Christian physician, is there going to be a day that I'll be required to perform sex change surgeries or be required to practice euthanasia or abortion? And what will I do about that? We're going to see a day when the masterpiece cake shop sort of thing becomes what most Christians are facing if they're willing to stand for biblical morality in a culture that rejects that morality as dangerous to society. And now's the time to begin counting that cost, knowing what that's going to look like perhaps, and be praying for the strength and courage we need as we move forward.
Yeah, and thinking of, speaking of Jack, the court is literally deciding at this very moment on that second case against him. And again, I know that in the last few seconds we have, an Illinois church recently had a promotion of a drag queen showing in their Sunday morning service that Al Mohler called an open revolt against God's intent for humanity. But it seems to me, again, that we speak, but sometimes I feel, Jim Dennison, like Isaiah and Jeremiah, where in Jeremiah there's 52 chapters of hey, unless things change, there's going to be judgment. Unless things change, there's going to be judgment. And it does become a little bit frustrating.
It does. And at the end of the day, our call is to be faithful. Mother Teresa was starting an orphanage. She was asked how she would measure the success of this. She said, our Lord never called us to success. He called us to faithfulness and love. That is success.
And that is success. And again, there seems to be, we go all the way back in history, Jim Dennison, as you know, Augustine was told that as the barbarians were coming down on Rome, that the dissolution of Rome is going to mean the dissolution of Christianity. Historically, we discovered that that didn't happen. Rome fell, but the gospel persists. I'm going to suggest, like you, that the gospel still remains the best solution to the problem of sin.
Absolutely. For me, for you, for every human heart across all of human history. And that's the good news. We have the best hope of all to offer a culture so desperate for hope today.
Well, Jim Dennison, it sounds to me like you're going to need another vacation to get over your vacation.
I have a son that can write, and I will go do that, and we will go from there.
Well, again, thanks so much for being my guest. We're looking forward to the article on April 30th. And we've got a lot to think about and to pray about over these next few weeks.
Thanks, my friend. So glad to be on with you today.
Thank you, Jim Dennison. This is Gino Gerasian.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.